From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. There it was, Saturday morning, Norfolk, Virginia. Mitt Romney introduced his new running mate, 42-year-old Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan. And Ryan was all fired up.
I'm thrilled to be a part of America's comeback team, and together we will unite America and get this done.
Picking Ryan was a bold move. Conservatives cheered. You heard it right there. The Obama camp said radical and extremist. Everybody said the choice is wider now. This hour on Point, Romney, Ryan, Obama, Biden. And the choice in 2012, you can join the conversation. Are you energized by Mitt Romney's pick for VP, Paul Ryan? Are you alarmed? What does Paul Ryan bring to the Romney ticket, to the race? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. It got off a little rocky here when the Republican candidate Mitt Romney sort of flubbed the first introduction, giving him the top slot. Here it is.
Join me in welcoming the next president of the United States, Paul Ryan.
Wait a minute. Not the president. He came back and did it right.
Every now and then, I'm known to make a mistake. I did not make a mistake with this guy. But I can tell you this, he's going to be the next vice president of the United States.
Okay, there we go. And this about Paul Ryan and what people think of him.
There are a lot of people in the other party who might disagree with Paul Ryan. I don't know of anyone who doesn't respect his character and judgment.
And off we go. With us now from Washington is Major Garrett, White House correspondent for the National Journal, contributor to 2012 Decoded, the Journal's campaign analysis site. Major Garrett, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Always great to be with you, Tom.
And from New York, Mark Halperin is here, editor-at-large at Time Magazine, creator and author of Time.com's The Page News and Analysis Tip Sheet, co-author of Game Change, the big book on the Sarah Palin pick in 08. Mark Halperin, wonderful to have you here today as well.
Tom, always happy to be here. Thank you.
Mark, what do you make of this pick?
Well, I think it is executed very well just from a technical point of view. I think it is no doubt inspired elite conservatives and some grassroots conservatives. It's so far made Governor Romney a better candidate. I think there are 2.5 big questions here that will determine whether on balance and net this was a good pick. One is the Medicare debate and the large debate over the House Republican budget that Ryan authored. Will this race now turn from a referendum on the president and the economy to one about choices regarding tax rates for the wealthiest Americans and how to deal with Medicare? If it does, the pick could end up being a backfire in Governor Romney. Two is, can Paul Ryan appeal to centrist voters, to the center of the electorate, where a lot of this election will be decided? I think the jury's out on that, whether he'll add to that or subtract from that. And then I think there's sort of a half question, which is whether people will raise questions about his fitness for office. He's a pretty young guy to be commander-in-chief. He doesn't have extensive national security experience. That debate has not been engaged very much so far. We'll see if that gets teased out in the coming days.
Major Garrett, there are always pluses and minuses. Take us down the pros and cons here.
Well, a couple of demonstrable pros for the Romney campaign. Paul Ryan is an ideas generator. He creates vision. He closes the vision quotient gap that the Romney campaign was having. He ends, if there ever existed, any lingering doubts among conservatives about whether they should or ought to or enthusiastically back this ticket. Paul Ryan is also authentic. Many Democrats disagree with his particular policy proposals, but all Democrats I've talked to, and I haven't talked to every single one of them, but most, I think Mark would agree with me on this, view Paul Ryan as someone who authentically cares, reads, listens, drafts, and takes the political risks involved to push his ideas forward. And not everyone does that in Washington, so that authenticity also helps. I would say those are three very important pluses. Three or more possible downsides. One, he's inexperienced on a national zoo-like presidential campaign. And there's really no other way to prepare you for that. And he's going to be in the middle of a cauldron right away. Paul Ryan's natural tendency is to be talkative and voluble and kick around his ideas. That is something that doesn't work very well in a vice presidential campaign or a national campaign, because every single word you say can be held against you and often will by your opponents. As Mark said, he introduces and injects into this campaign in a way that wasn't true before, a huge debate about the future of entitlements. Now, some Republicans relish that, but some Republicans are scared of it, and many independents may not be ready for it. Paul Ryan has injected that in the campaign, and unless Romney is comfortable with it and passionate about it in equal measure with Paul Ryan, this is going to be a problem for the Romney-Ryan ticket going forward. The other problem for Paul Ryan is that he doesn't bring an obvious state to the table. He makes it harder to win Florida. He may make it harder to win Ohio, and he doesn't necessarily bring Wisconsin. So geographically, and I know we have tended to come to a conclusion in American presidential politics that no one can really deliver a state anymore. That may be true. But I think there are other picks that have kind of got you closer to that if you're Mitt Romney than Paul Ryan does. So geographically, he may be a net deficit.
Mark Halperin, interpret the choice for us. Mitt Romney had options. He went for this one. What does that say?
Well, I think first and foremost, he did what he said he was going to do and what he should do, both for policy and politics, which is he picked someone who he thought would help him be able to govern and would be a positive force in trying to enact what Mitt Romney believes the federal government should and shouldn't do. I think also the campaign realized that you know, the phrase game-changing pick comes up in the context of these choices now. You need some excitement. And the other two people who seem to get a lot of focus from the campaign and from Governor Romney, Rob Portman and Tim Pawlenty, it would be hard to make them exciting picks. It would be hard for them to generate the kind of excitement and enthusiasm in the press and at least on the right that Paul Ryan has. And I think that was part of the calculation, the kind of optics and imagery and energy that Ryan added as compared to some of the other choices of people who might have been seen as instantly more qualified but not necessarily as exciting.
Let's see how it's hitting Americans right now. Let's get out where the campaigning is going on today, or nearby anyway. Galena, Illinois, calling in. John. Hi, John. You're on the air. What do you think? Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Now, I was thinking, I think that this VP choice is a very good choice, that it's going to fire up the Republican base, and I think it'll slam some doors on some of the states that were kind of in doubt. I know in Iowa and Wisconsin, it was kind of a lot of conservatives and a lot of Republicans were worried that Romney might be too centrist. Now, using Paul, I think it's going to fire up the base a lot more, and he's going to get a lot more votes in Iowa and Wisconsin. For the Republicans, anyway.
So you feel the fire coming here, fired up feeling. Mark Halperin, what about that? Can he deliver a state? Could he deliver Wisconsin? Where do you think he might actually make a difference on the electoral board?
Well, he doesn't instantly transform in a positive or negative way any single state except for Wisconsin. That's a state that hadn't seen much political activity, in part because the campaigns were waiting for the recall effort that your listeners know all about. Governor Walker. Even since that recall ended, it has not been put much into play. The polls show the president with a big lead there, a sizable lead, and he won it big last time. But it is a state that President Bush competed in vigorously and fell just short on. I think they will certainly take a look at it. You'll see investment from the campaign and from outside groups into the state to see if they can get it close. He's a congressman. He's not a statewide official. So how much influence he can have in tilting that state is unclear. But beyond that, at this point, I don't think he puts any other state in play, and the Democrats believe and are certainly arguing that he can hurt in states like Iowa and Pennsylvania and Florida, battleground states with substantial populations of elderly voters who may be scared off by Ryan's ideas on Medicare.
Major, what about our caller in Illinois? He's fired up about it. He sees conservative Republicans as being fired up about it. Enthusiasm matters. How does that translate on the electoral board?
Well, I think it's an important plus factor on the upside for the Romney campaign. It's my belief, and I wrote this at nationaljournal.com, that one of the other things that Ryan brings, he will bring genuine enthusiasm to the Romney ticket among conservatives who will now slap that bumper sticker on their car and do it with a higher degree of pride and emphasis than they would have had it been Romney or Pawlenty or Portman. As Mark said, it does bring excitement and a sense of energy and a dynamism that was sorely lacking for the Romney campaign. And that could be very helpful in these tightly contested states. The Romney campaign does not have the ground game infrastructure the Obama campaign does, not by a long shot. Now, they believe they don't need it because, as they told me in Boston when I was there a couple weeks ago, GDP numbers knock on every door. Bad unemployment numbers knock on every door. We don't need a national campaign organization. The RNC will help us, and the terrible economy will propel and carry our message. So you add that together, I think that's a net plus for the Romney campaign. But as we've already said, Ryan does bring risks, and he may, in fact, engender a debate on entitlements that take away from that larger structural debate on whether or not you're satisfied or dissatisfied with the Obama economy. And if the Romney campaign can't play that out advantageously on its side of the ledger, then Ryan may, in retrospect, look to be more hazardous than he does right now.
New York, East Hampton, New York. Neil's calling. Neil, you're on the air.
Okay, I think this is a terrible choice for Romney. He already has a negative learning curve as a politician in terms of this election. But what Ryan brings to the table is somebody who drank the Kool-Aid, you know, like Bush did, like Clinton did, like Reagan did. It diminishes your political capacity by 50%. And Ryan's someone who believes everything he says, whether it's true or not. It's almost pathological. So I think
what's the Kool-Aid? You're putting that across quite a broad spectrum there. What's the heart of the thing that you're worried about him believing?
In terms of his economic philosophy, if you ever read his plan, you can take 40% of it and throw it in the garbage. You can take another 30% and say it's sheer fantasy. He believes it all. He doesn't see it as fantasy. He doesn't see it as window dressing. He really thinks that what he's selling is true. And, you know, there's no value to it. There's no depth.
Neil, we've got your view right there, Mark Halpern. He's widely described as the intellectual leader, or now the Democrats like to say ideological leader of the Republican Party. Our caller doesn't buy it, but he gets a lot of respect in the Washington context, Mark.
Well, he's certainly an inside figure. He's not very well known. He does bring not just support from conservative intellectuals, but from the media. He's much more popular and better known to the political media than Mitt Romney is. We'll see how he plays in the country. He's a friendly, nice guy, and there are a lot of liberals who will stridently disagree with him on his policy positions, but will like him personally, and that's obviously an advantage in politics and something Governor Romney has had trouble pulling off.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at the Romney-Ryan ticket today, the Paul Ryan factor now in the 2012 campaign, and the choice ahead for American voters. Mark Halpern is here from Time Magazine, Time.com's The Page, co-author of Game Change, the big book about Sarah Palin in 08 and much more. Major Garrett joins us from Washington, White House correspondent for The National Journal, contributor to 2012 Decoded, the National Journal's campaign analysis site. President Obama talking about the choice over the weekend. He was in Chicago at a campaign fundraiser here, congratulating Congressman Ryan, but made it clear the two were on opposite poles.
Congressman Ryan is a decent man. He is a family man. He is an articulate spokesman for Governor Romney's vision. But it's a vision that I fundamentally disagree with.
And then you can go back and finding the president talking about a phrase that Newt Gingrich once used here, thinly veiled social Darwinism as well. This happens to be from a media luncheon in April.
This congressional Republican budget is something different altogether. It is a Trojan horse. Disguised as deficit reduction plans, it is really an attempt to impose a radical vision on our country. It is thinly veiled social Darwinism.
Oh, boy. Okay, there you go. Right back to Newt Gingrich's words. Gingrich walked away from those. The president was happy to pull him out right there. Mark Halpern, Major Garrett, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation right now from Fairfield, Ohio, a professor of economics at the Miami University of Ohio, a man who taught Paul Ryan back in the early 90s when he was fresh into college, and they thought a lot about the world and principles. Rich Hart is with us. Professor Hart, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. It's my pleasure.
What was this young man like when he walked through your doors way back before he began his 14 years in Congress?
Bright, articulate, cerebral. But most of all, the thing that stood out most of all about Paul was he was intellectually curious. And that's something that stands out with all faculty at colleges now because it's an increasingly rare characteristic among students.
What are the principles that you talked about way back then that you're a conservative, that you hope he'll bring, if they're successful, to the White House now?
Primarily a reliance on, it's the conservative view, a reliance on small government and a reliance on free markets as the best way to allocate resources leads to larger increases in income, greater wealth creation for everyone. And the other thing that I think he will bring, he's going to bring ideas to this campaign. And I think it was Major Garrett I heard say that if they get into a discussion on entitlements, it may hurt him. Actually, I think I disagree with that. I think we need to have this discussion on entitlements. We know we're rushing towards this fiscal cliff, financial Armageddon, if you like, and the speed with which we're approaching it has certainly increased since President Obama's been in office. And we know what the source of this this financial crisis is. We know it's these entitlement programs, Medicare and Medicaid in particular, to a lesser extent, Social Security. And Paul Ryan has got a plan to reform these entitlement programs and put the federal government back on a path towards fiscal stability.
Professor, you were there early on teaching him about principles of governance. Now he's a full-blown actor, big actor in Washington. We've got listeners responding in, you know, all over the map here. Ian says he likes him so much, he says, change the ticket to Ryan Romney. Turn it around, put Ryan on top. But Anita writes to us, Professor, why does everybody keep saying Paul Ryan is innovative? Isn't this the program Republicans always wanted? Get rid of Medicare and Social Security. Give tax cuts to the rich.
Gee, I've read the Ryan plan. I don't see anything in it about getting rid of Medicare and Medicaid. His recent Medicare proposal actually does something that Democrats claim they like: give people choice. You can stay in Medicare, or you can take the vouchers from the government and buy private insurance. So you know, this is just this typical scare tactic that he's going to get. I heard David Axelrod say this on television yesterday. Oh well, he's going to
nice guy, but extreme.
Just not true. And look. He has a plan to reform Medicare, and is the plan going to be? Of course, it's going to impose some cost on people. That's mm-hmm. the nature of the game. We need to reduce the cost of these programs. But what's the Democratic alternative? They don't have a plan.
Mark Halpern, you hear right there. A man who helped shape Paul Ryan's view of the world. How wide is the appeal today? Is there a big enough chunk of the electorate that's ready to say, yes, get out the axe, and, you know, let's protect this and that, but let's also cut, because we've got to cut and cut big?
Not according to current polls, but part of what elections are about and leadership's about is trying to change public opinion.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of Republicans who look at Paul Ryan's decision to press forward with a budget with a lot of politically unpopular things in it and make House Republicans vote on it when it had no chance of becoming law, and feel that's a mistake. This election, every Republican leader I've talked to with a broad sense of the moment for the past year, even before Mitt Romney was a nominee, said the only way to win this election and make it worth it is to make these kind of arguments, to try to lead the public towards a different view of what should Medicare be like, what should the tax code be like. They are currently positions that are not popular. They're not broadly popular. And if the election is a referendum on does the public want Medicare to change, does the public want the wealthiest to pay lower tax rates, Governor Romney and Congressman Ryan will lose. Their task now in a very short period of time is to change the game regarding the public perceptions of those big issues.
Let's get a call from Stowe, Vermont. Steve, you're on the air, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. You know, I couldn't disagree more with the professor. I think that Paul Ryan is much too extreme, mainly because he's a disciple of Ayn Rand, and their philosophy basically says cut the government as much as possible and make sure that you give as many benefits as possible to the creative class, in other words, the 1% and the people who need government assistance. Well, it's too bad. It's like dog eat dog and forget about you.
Steve, thanks for your call. Professor, yes, Ayn Rand was a big influence on Paul Ryan, he has said. And yes, she wants to vaunt and hold up the creative class, or the sort of, you know, those who make it all happen. You hear Steve's worry about that, Professor.
Right, and you know, I don't think it's warranted. Look, it wasn't just Ayn Rand that he was reading. He was reading Milton Friedman and Hayek's Road to Serfdom. And when you read those, there is an emphasis on the individual. There's an emphasis on individual freedom and liberty, and with that individual freedom and liberty goes responsibility. If we continue down the path that President Obama takes us, sort of this path towards socialism, it leads to tyranny, abandonment of the rule of law, as we saw in General Motors bailout, and a huge loss of individual freedoms and individual liberty. So Mark Halpin's right. This is going to be an election about ideas. And back to this entitlement thing. What better person to make the argument on entitlement reform than Paul Ryan, since he's the architect of the only plan that's out there? Well, Simpson Bowles, but President Obama's already made it clear he's not interested. He's not interested in Simpson Bowles. I don't think he's interested in entitlement reform. So the question is, do we do the entitlement reforms, or do we just wait until we have this debt crisis and we become like Greeks? I agree completely. This is a debate that the country needs to have, and I think that's what this election is going to be about. Do we want to go down the path to European socialism, low rates of growth, stagnant income, have more income equality, but it'll be at a lower average level of income for everyone?
Professor Rich Hart at Miami University in Ohio taught Paul Ryan there when he came to school, college, back in the day. Professor, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Y'all have a good one.
You too. Major Garrett, do you think that Mitt Romney is going to put Paul Ryan out there in front to have that big debate? Does Mitt Romney want to have that, or is that a distraction from the Romney Uber message he's been saying? It's the economy right now. We need to judge the president on that, not the structure of things down the road.
Well, he doesn't have a choice anymore. By putting Paul Ryan on the ticket, Mitt Romney has invited himself to that debate, and he better be ready for it. And he better be prepared to talk specifically about the Paul Ryan budget and make sure that if he's not going to enact all of it, that he understands exactly what he would enact as president and why. Because he, for better or worse, and it's going to be up to him to determine whether it's for better or for worse, owns the Paul Ryan budget. Now, they've already said, I'm the president, I have a 59-point plan, fine. But as I wrote at National Journal this weekend, there's not five Republicans on Capitol Hill who can name point four of the Romney 59-point plan. But they've all voted for the Ryan budget because Ryan, in their world, was politically persuasive and substantive on a policy basis. One other thing that one of your emailers wrote in that I think is worth noting. I want to flip the ticket around, he said. Let's be
Make it Ryan
cautious.
Romney. Yeah.
Yes. Let's be cautious about this. No running mate ever has elected a president, and none ever will. It's the nominee at the top of the ticket who must provide all of the authentic rationale to be elected. No running mate can do that. And the longer we spend talking about Ryan and accepting the premise that he injects authenticity, substance, vision, that's a net negative for Romney because he's the one ultimately people are going to vote for, not Paul Ryan.
Interesting. I mean, over the weekend, it didn't feel like a net negative. It felt like energy, and Paul Ryan eager to push for that big choice about the country's future. Here he was at a rally yesterday in Wisconsin.
So here's our choice. Do we want that opportunity society with a safety net, the land of upward mobility, where people can make the most of their lives, where they can get ahead? Or do we want to go down the path of debt, doubt, and despair? Do we want to copy Europe? No.
No. Do we want to copy Europe? Right now, Congressman, another Congressman, Brad Sherman, joins us from Sherman Oaks, California. Represents Congress been there since 1997, the San Fernando Valley. Congressman Sherman, thank you very much for joining us. What do you make of Mitt Romney's choice for a vice presidential running mate?
I think it's self-indulgent. Here's a man who has known for 5 or 6 years he's running for president. He didn't bother to get rid of his Cayman Islands investments in 2009. Here's a man who continues to own a dressage horse, and now, having suffered from that and many other things, he has to change the game, and so he goes with someone who expresses energetic ideological purity in a way that is not going to appeal to independent voters. And even the Tea Partiers may take a second look. Well, they won't, but, you know, Ryan voted for the Wall Street bailout twice, so there may even be a little inconsistency in a gentleman who's one of the more consistent members in Congress.
But he is certainly a Tea Party favorite at this point. You may have heard some of his professor from college days, Rich Hart, there in Ohio, saying, look, this is the guy. If we want to get our budget under control, if we want to look at entitlements and do what's necessary there, he's a conservative professor saying, Ryan's the guy. You're in Congress. What do you think it would mean if there's a Romney-Ryan victory and things push forward in the Ryan fashion?
Well, I think we'd if they really had the majorities in Congress that they seek, and this is they're not this is not a running play designed to get 3 or 4 yards. This is a long pass down the field, and if they get the large majorities, they will indeed end Medicare as we know it. They'll radically change Social Security, and we'll get a full dose of Ayn Rand and the ultra-conservative economic philosophy.
What about those who say, well, you know, I mean, and it's kind of implicit in what you first said here, Congressman, Mitt Romney's not as ideologically pure or fired up as Paul Ryan. If he won the White House, he would not go down that full road. He's got more moderate instincts.
Well, by selecting Ryan, he is embracing the Ryan budget and philosophy, because that's a strong taste. And he has not, in the first 48 hours, identified any part of the Ryan budget or philosophy that he's saying, well, that isn't part of the Romney-Ryan ticket. If he goes more than another couple of days without specifically disclaiming part of the Ryan program, then when he does try to disclaim it in October, he's going to look like a flip-flopper.
Mark Halperin, can Mitt Romney have Paul Ryan as a running mate, or even if you just see him as a hood ornament on the campaign, then win if he should win and govern otherwise, govern more moderately, not embrace those Ryan proposals?
Well, it's the biggest question for the country, I think, right now. I am skeptical of both the president's ability to produce a grand bargain by standing up to some elements of his own party and finding compromise with the other party. I'm skeptical of a Romney-Ryan White House team doing that as well. I hope I'm wrong for the sake of the country. I don't see any way to meet the challenges we're going to face in January regarding all the tax and spending cut issues that could send us off that fiscal cliff and into recession or worse. We need a strong president, and we need a president who can reach across the aisle. And right now, I would say for all the positives for the Republicans of adding Paul Ryan, I just don't see, as a matter of relationships, temperament, or ideological moorings, I don't see how Paul Ryan will help Mitt Romney find that grand bargain, govern more in the center right away, which will be essential to deal with, again, those unusual, I think unprecedented set of issues that whoever wins in November is going to have to face in January.
Congressman Sherman in California, we've just got you for another minute. You're there in Congress. You've been there. You've seen Paul Ryan at work. I mean, even Axelrod and the president described him as, you know, genial and a nice guy. Mitt Romney says he'll be my man in Congress. He can work with both parties. He can help us move things forward. What about it? Can he? Could he?
If the Republicans rack up huge majorities, then he can be the leader of a Republican caucus that can ignore Democrats. He certainly hasn't put together a bipartisan budget that had strong support on both sides of the aisle. I don't know if anybody could have. That was not his objective this last year, and I don't think it'll be his objective next year.
Do you think he gives the GOP ticket a bump, a boost here?
I think it's most likely he hurts the ticket, but I think instead of this being a close election, it still may be close, but it opens up a very distinct possibility that the Democrats win big, and it opens up the slightest little possibility that the Republicans win big. Nobody can say these tickets are Tweedledum and Tweedledee.
A choice, a real fork in the road. Democratic Congressman Brad Sherman joining us today from Sherman Oaks, California. Congressman Sherman, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we are looking this hour at the Romney-Ryan ticket, the Paul Ryan factor, now in the 2012 campaign, and the choice ahead coming very soon for American voters. What do you think? What is that choice? Now, you can see the tickets, Romney-Ryan, Obama-Biden. What's the choice here? Major Garrett joins us from Washington, White House correspondent for The National Journal, and Mark Halperin in New York, editor-at-large at Time Magazine, and the page there at Time.com, co-author of Game Change, which took us way into these decisions in 08. Lots of feedback online. Kathleen says, love this choice. This country needs someone who understands finance. Clearly, Obama and Biden do not, she says, all caps. But Jim writes, this is the dream ticket of the preservative party, which is, has as its goal preserving the outsized gains made by the wealthiest over the past 35 years at the expense of everyone else, cementing the resulting unprecedented inequality in place for the foreseeable future. I don't know. Peter writes online, Ryan Authentic? And he says, Major Garrett, talk to Paul Krugman, who says he's, in fact, a big fraud who doesn't care at all about fiscal responsibility. There's all kinds of views on that. Hold that one, Major. Let's hear from a listener, and I'll come to you. Eileen in Hartford, Connecticut.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My head is spinning in this conversation, but I'd like to say one thing about if it was a Ryan Romney White House, I think that it would be an...
Or Romney Ryan, maybe. Okay, yeah.
Well, you know what, though? I think that slip may have been real. I think that Ryan would be an imperial vice president. He dominates the whole discussion. Romney has been all over the map from the moderate left to the far right. He has no core. I don't think Romney has any true core values. He wants to get in the office, and he'll do anything to get it. But my primary reason for calling is... Romney and Ryan would destroy women's reproductive health care. They would intrude upon our reproductive life, and I think they would be very, very devastating for the young women in our country, because as we know, early and unwanted pregnancies, lack of access to birth control causes lots of social issues, long-term financial obligations from a governmental standpoint, and it affects the majority of our population, and no one is talking about the Republicans' attack against women's ability to be autonomous and to determine their own lives and their own future.
Eileen, let us pick it up right here. I'm glad you've raised it. We'll come back to Romney's core and Paul Ryan's core, who's got more fire there. But what about on the social issues, Major? Another Elaine asks online about birth control, abortion, gun control, gay marriage. What about Paul Ryan?
Well, let's go back to the word authentic. He's an authentic social conservative, Paul Ryan is. A very strong voting record from those on the social conservative right who follow these things closely, chart the votes, and keep long-term tabs on them. Paul Ryan ranks very high, National Right to Life, the various other pro-life so-called groups, National Rifle Association. On the social conservative side, and you saw this in the instant reaction on Saturday, strong applause for Ryan, what he represents, and what he has voted for in the past. And I will tell you, when I was in Boston talking to the Romney campaign, they knew that the advertisements run by the Obama campaign talking about Romney's agenda as it relates to women's rights, contraception, birth control, the abortion issue were cutting, and they knew they had some work to do there. Well, to use the hackneyed phrase that I wish we could get rid of, but for some reason I'm going to bring it up right now, Romney's doubled down on this with Paul Ryan. Those are mirror images of his approach, newly won approach, social conservative, on some of these issues, gay marriage, pro-life, gun control, etc. Back to the Paul Krugman authentic versus disauthentic. You can have a debate about policy. Paul Ryan thinks Paul Krugman is wrong and completely egg-headed in the ill-informed way about budget issues, taxation, the true genesis of growth, revenue, and funding government.
But if we
they disagree on policy, they both are authentic about their ideas and their approach to bringing them to the public square. That's all I meant.
If I recall on the substance of it, Krugman or others have pointed to, here's Paul Ryan's plan on the deficit, but it doesn't get us to a balanced budget for something like 30 years. And they've said if he were serious about it, they wouldn't be cutting taxes as much at the top. And that seemed to be the heart of the inauthenticity charge.
Well, then they would want to pick up the other Rand, not Ayn Rand, but Rand Paul, because he has a budget that's much more aggressive, that balances much earlier. And some fiscal conservatives, hard fiscal conservatives, sometimes cluck their tongues a little bit at Paul Ryan's budget, saying it doesn't get anywhere nearly fast enough. And they also point out that previously during the Bush era, Paul Ryan voted for the two wars, unfunded, voted for the Bush tax cuts, not paid for, voted for Medicare Part D, which extended prescription drug benefits on an unfunded basis as well. So there are those who look at his record and don't say that there is not complete fiscal conservatism there, because many of those things were policy priorities that were not paid for.
Mark, what about the other point Eileen made, which was she looks at these two men and she sees a much sterner, maybe stronger ideological core in Paul Ryan. Many people have seen a lot of, shall we say, flexibility in Mitt Romney. And Eileen says she feels that Paul Ryan would kind of run over or, you know, run the ideological heart of a Romney administration. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I mean, there's reason to look at the span of their careers and say that Paul Ryan has been more of a ideological conservative than Mitt Romney has. But I think Governor Romney right now, before he picked Paul Ryan and after, is in sync with what he'd like to see the federal government, how they'd like to see it change from its current place. Paul Ryan will be, I think, rarely, if ever, if they're in the White House, someone who's telling Mitt Romney to go more left. But I think at this point, I take Governor Romney at his word that he is as committed to changing the state of Washington and dealing with the deficit as Paul Ryan is.
Pamela, Concord, Massachusetts. Pamela, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I want to ask you, please, to concentrate more on what the results of the policies of the politicians would be, rather on what people think of them as people. It's like judging an Olympic athlete by what clothes they're wearing and how people like their haircut, rather than how they execute their sports.
Well, I think that's what we want to look at here. We're trying to look at the policies being put forward and where they would take us. I mean, after all, that's kind of at the heart of the choice. But I take your point. I mean, Major, let's go right to it. Let's go to if there's now the big choice in front of the American voter, talk in substantive terms about what the two forks are as you see them.
Okay, let's look at the Paul Ryan budget in not microscopic ways, but broad strokes. Two tax rates, 25% and 10%, and very low taxes on dividends and investment income, lower than Mitt Romney has proposed having, because Paul Ryan, as an advocate of economic philosophy of Friedrich Hayek, Edward von Mises, and Milton Friedman, believes lower taxes on investment create more investment, more productive capital, more jobs, more engines for revenue and growth. So he would have a more aggressive tax cutting posture than even Mitt Romney has put forward.
And that would redound heavily to
statistically, of course, to those who are wealthiest.
Make
absolutely
the capital gains.
There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. None whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Secondarily, on Medicare, he would preserve it for those who are in Medicare now, although he would scale back the shrinking of the Medicare donut hole coverage that is in the president's health care law. So even seniors now would see some benefits taken away from them, but the structure of Medicare would remain for anyone 55 or older at enactment. But for those younger, you'd have a choice. Stay in Medicare or get a government voucher, take that cash, and then go in the private sector, pursue your own health insurance coverage with that money. If it's sufficient, you might be happy. If it's not sufficient, you may have to accept higher premiums and lower coverage and be less satisfied than the traditional Medicare recipient. If you receive Medicaid, meaning if you're a poor American in states with a federal state share, which is all 50 states in the union, your governor would get a lump sum. There would not be this federal dictate as to what the benefit structure is and how the money would be allocated out of Washington. There would be a lump sum, and the governors could create whatever funding mechanism and coverage scheme they thought best to serve their Medicaid needs. Substantial changes in both those entitlement programs. Last thing, he would scale back domestic discretionary spending every single year, meaning less to spend on education, space exploration, environmental regulation,
dramatically
and things like
less,
that.
Right? He's saying we don't have the money. We're borrowing.
And
all
he would not provide a similar or even near similar cuts to defense. That's the Ryan budget. That's the broad strokes.
So, Mark, if that's the Ryan, the Romney Ryan avenue here, what's the choice then that voters are looking at? Is that up against what? What two countries emerge from this choice?
What two countries emerge?
Well, yeah, if it's sort of two different countries, if you follow them on down these roads.
Well, I actually think for all the talk of this being, you know, the clearest choice and the clearest distinction, neither party's going to have 60 votes in the Senate. Neither party can strike the necessary grand bargain without cooperation from the other side. So I actually have the suspicion that unless one party really wins an overwhelming victory, that the outcome of what the grand bargain looks like, and I hope and expect there will be one, won't be all that different. It will be different, but the notion that you're going to have some fundamental remaking of the government one way or the other, I just don't think is true.
Major, do you agree that this, you know, we'll come to some kind of grand bargain here? It is still the U.S. of A. The needle still sits somewhere in the middle, or not?
Well, the great genius of our system is the ability to compromise. We benefit as a country, we grow as a country, and we progress as a country when we compromise. We stall when we don't. And I think there are many economists who look at the stall situation in Washington and say that is one of the reasons our economy is also stalled, because our political class cannot reach grand bargains. I would disagree ever so slightly with Mark's observation. If Republicans retain control of the House, win 51 or 52 seats in the Senate, have a President Romney, then through reconciliation, through a process that doesn't need 60 votes, they can enact many things on this agenda. And that is something that Democrats, I think, are going to spend a lot of time talking about. I think the tenacity for which they will fight over the Senate races, many of which are closely contested, will be visited through the eyes of the Ryan budget and the implications thereof. So I think there is a possibility that if Republicans run the table, they could restructure things more extensively than it might appear right now. If there is any division, even if there's a Romney president but a Democratic Senate, then things have to reach a grand bargain. But if Republicans, as Brad Sherman indicated earlier, run the table, they will be positioned in the earliest part of a Romney administration to, number one, change a lot of the things that President Obama enacted in his first 2 years, and then enact some of the things that Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan have already advocated, which is tax reform, lower tax rates, changes to Medicare, changes to Medicaid, a vast, much more exploration and domestic production approach to energy. Those kinds of things would be possible under reconciliation.
Let's go to Ryan in Columbia, South Carolina. Ryan, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks, Tom. I think my real question is, how does Ryan bring Romney more power into Congress? I feel like he just politicizes and polarizes Romney more towards the conservative side. I don't know how that reaches across the aisle to Democrats. And in fact, it might have pushed me away from voting for Romney, even though I am a conservative, because he is such a young running mate. I thought Ron Paul, who is a very more polarizing figure but has so much experience in Congress, could get the votes. And I feel like we're just deadlocked in Congress. We can't get anything done. I'd rather get something done rather than sit stagnant. Because stagnant gets you nowhere. Even if it's the wrong thing in the end, I'd rather vote and get something done rather than do nothing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people may have that feeling at this point. Ryan, I appreciate your call. Mark Halperin, how about it? I mean, there's talk of a grand bargain, but is Paul Ryan really one who has helped push toward that? There's talk about his geniality, but is he a factor of paralysis or movement in Congress? Has he been?
I regretfully say, because I do think we need a grand bargain, that he pushes us towards paralysis. He is not a unifying figure. He's not personally disliked by Democrats, as some Republicans are, but it is impossible for Mitt Romney to make the kind of closing argument I thought he was going to make when picking Rob Portman of Ohio as his running mate, to say, you know what, the president has failed in 4 years and working across the aisle for the most part, and I'll be able to do it. Paul Ryan is uncompromising on ideology. And I think from the point of view of someone who wants to see a grand bargain, thinks it's necessary, I think Ryan is a pick that is almost impossible for me to imagine helping in that respect.
One more. From
Tom, could I jump in there real
Major,
quick on
sure.
that? Because I talked to several Republicans over the weekend on this very question, and they said Ryan is good in a governing context only within a Republican conversation. Meaning only if Republicans run the table, because they said Paul Ryan can have conversations with moderate Republicans like Susan Collins of Maine or others, the dwindling in number they are, and the hard social conservatives and the fiscal conservatives, and say this is what we need to do for President Romney. So within a Republican dialogue, meaning 51, 52 votes in a reconciliation, Paul Ryan can be in their eyes, Republican eyes, extremely effective. But anything outside that, where, as Mark said, you have to bring Democrats across the aisle or have productive conversations with them in hopes of getting them across the aisle, Paul Ryan is not your guy. Rob Portman would have been much better suited to do that kind of negotiating.
Mark Halperin, let's come back to the choice here. How do you see the choice then? If it's now an even bigger choice in November that Americans will be looking at?
Well, I think we're going to have to see how it plays out. I hope that we have a much more adult and sophisticated and serious conversation about the options the country faces than we've had so far. I worry that Democrats will be so eager to demagogue on Medicare and on tax cuts now that we won't have a serious discussion. We had our debate moderators named today, and those four journalists, our colleagues, are going to be under a lot of pressure, Tom, to keep those sessions on focus. 90 minutes each, not a lot of time,
right?
But far better potentially than television commercials and stump speeches and
we
press
hope.
Releases and tweets, mm-hmm. at least potentially than any other opportunities we'll have this year.
But that choice, you know, Paul Ryan says it's between taking responsibility and a European future. We heard him say, Mark.
I'm sorry, were you talking to me?
Yes.
You cut out at the end. I really heard.
We heard Paul Ryan say, "Look, Obama's put us on a path toward Europe. We'll take us back to some kind of individual responsibility America."
That's rhetoric that we've heard from Mitt Romney from the beginning of the campaign, and again, it's meant to draw a bright line, but it's also very political. Paul Ryan supports, a lot of the types of government programs that Barack Obama supports, and we're seeing rhetoric like that from both sides. I've been very disappointed that the candidates haven't asked their campaigns to take this to a different, more substantive place because they're both substantive guys, but I still hope that happens.
Well, we're on the home stretch now, and we will try and do it right here. Grateful to the two of you for opening up with us today on Romney Ryan and the contest. Mark Halperin at Time Magazine, thank you so much for joining us, Mark.
Thank you, Tom.
And Major Garrett with the National Journal, wonderful to have you, Major.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.